sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, here with Becky Ivins.
Good morning, everybody.
Do you have your earphones on finally?
I do, finally.
So if you guys don't know this about Becky, so Mike Gannon, the great producer's in here first. I usually come in here second. Becky rolls in just a few minutes before show is ready to begin. But you're always ready on time.
Well, okay. That's all it takes, right? I probably fit something else into my day. I do have a habit of crowding my schedule, for sure. I don't want to miss out on anything. FOMO, right?
That's
fear,
right.
Of missing out.
Oh, I heard a new one. I heard JOMO. The joy of missing out.
Oh,
like when you get
JOMO.
To just sleep in on a Sunday morning. That's JOMO.
Nice.
Yeah, I got JOMO with that.
Okay.
So bad. Don't laugh at that. That's bad. Thank you, Mike Gannon. You didn't laugh. Appreciate it.
Okay. We've got Ron Shalhoub here. And on our commercial break, we're going to play our promo for us so that we'll know what we promised you we would cover. Because there's something else that came up this week, and I really want to cover it. We want to update you on the alien purchase.
Now, the aliens coming to town, yes.
I mean, we need to update you on that.
Yeah, so the last, maybe the last time you were in, we talked about this, the new law that's in place. And so, listener, if you want to go back and listen to that to kind of refresh yourself at a later date or go deeper into what was being done, you can always listen to podcast, a version of the radio show. It is out typically every Monday after the show, and you can subscribe to anywhere that you subscribe to podcasts.
Maybe I should have listened to that before I showed up.
Yeah, it's
what do we say?
We know you're ready, Ron Shalhoub.
Yeah, the podcast is ready on Monday because of JOMO, because Mark and Joy sleeping in on Sunday.
That's correct.
Okay, here we go. We've got Ron Shalhoub, who is my attorney at law, and we depend on Ron to keep us up to date, and he does a great job of it. So the Alien Ownership Act, you need to update us on that to start with.
Well, first I want to know, what is Mark drinking? Because, man, he is on a roll this morning.
I know, right?
I'm not telling you what's in my coffee cup.
Rare indigo. Goodness gracious, that's great. Yeah, the Alien Ownership Act, we talked about last time, which I don't remember when that was, but it was last year.
Right.
And the act was just coming into effect. It's got nothing to do with flying saucers or, you know, interstellar transportation or people seeing little green people all over the place.
Very disappointing, but continue.
I know. Yeah. I know. And it's got nothing to do with the CIA or that kind of thing. So we don't have to worry about that. Instead, that was something that's actually been part of the law in the state of Oklahoma. The state legislature, due to conditions that were coming up, just think of the cannabis industry that brought in a lot of foreign investment, has gotten very nervous about that alien people who are not residents of Oklahoma or even citizens of the United States were buying land in Oklahoma and then not just holding it, but actually developing it for the proprietary substances of cannabis and then having some illegal activities going on. So the idea is to kind of cut down a bit on that to get that more defined. So the attorney general was required by the Oklahoma State Legislature with a new law that came in to come up with an affidavit about alien ownership that has to be attached to every deed filed in every county in the state of Oklahoma. And we discussed some of this last time as to, well, what is a deed? When does it apply? When does it not apply? It was a two-page affidavit. There were some things that were inconsistent, it looked like, in it. Maybe not. We had some debates in the law group on the Estate Planning Probate Trust Committee and the Real Property Committee, which do great jobs, by the way. Shout out to them. So the Attorney General has since revisited it with his stellar assistants that he's got, and they have actually come up with some clarification. Brad Clark, who is the Deputy General Counsel, came up with a letter on February 6th, so now last month, but real recently, and they came up with new affidavits. It's now a one-page affidavit, not two pages. It's more clear, and you can actually go to the Attorney General website, find the forms or public forms, and you can fill them in online. You can type the information in there, print it off, and then sign it, but it is to be attached to deeds. So that's part of what's new, is that there's been clarification on the affidavit, and there has been clarification as to the affidavit itself and simplicity into it.
Well, Ron, I remember one of the things about it. If I'm remembering correctly, if I'm not, I expect you to correct me. As a young lad, I am.
We'll go back to the video review, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That one of the language in there was like, not that you live in the state, but that you perhaps someday maybe intend to possibly live in the state.
Well, it was the bona fide residency question.
Yeah.
And that's something that's still up in the air because the courts haven't clearly defined it. You know, this law is new, but the preceding law that actually enacted the prohibition anyway, and it's even constitutional in the Oklahoma Constitution, is quite old. It's just that there hasn't been much litigation over it to have the courts define what some of these terms mean, and the state legislature hasn't defined some of the terms because it's very difficult. There are so many situations that you can imagine. You get a situation where you've got a relative who's in France, and you die and you leave property to that relative in France. Well, they're not a U.S. citizen or a citizen of the state of Oklahoma. It's real property. What do you do? Things like that. So there's a lot of questions that will not be answered for some time. But they have clarified it. We have now new information that it doesn't apply to such things as transfer on death deeds because that's not considered a transferring deed. So it's been clarified that it's got to be a deed that actually transfers the interest in the property. It also has a situation to where on the affidavit now, you can have husband and wife sign one affidavit. We were going for a while. There had to be two. There's a question about like LLCs or trusts, who signs that? We know it's a trustee. We know for an LLC, it's going to be a managing member or someone with authority. Same thing with S Corporation. So we have some clarifications.
That's a lot.
So like in an LLC, does someone have to live in the state or intend to live in the state? Or
well, it has to do with the beneficiary. And we can pick that up after the break because I know we're coming up to a really quick break. Or at least you told me we were.
Yeah, we're about a minute away.
About a minute away.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you have to look at the ownership interest and the beneficial interest of the LLC. That's what they'll look at, not the LLC itself. So you need to be careful on that insofar as the affidavit is concerned. It says if the entity is a business, there's your LLC, its direct and indirect owners are United States citizens or bona fide residents of the state of Oklahoma. Okay?
Okay.
So it's either or. U.S. citizen if you're a non-resident, but if you are a resident of Oklahoma, you don't have to be a U.S. citizen.
Of course, you're going to probably be a U.S. citizen anyway if you're a resident of the state of Oklahoma. There's some questions on that, but bona fide resident of the state of Oklahoma, correct. Now, this does get into such things as our Native American friends as well. We had that question last time, talked about that a bit. But you do want to look at the affidavit because it is signed under oath and make sure you comply with it. But the most important thing is they say in the affidavit that the deed to which this affidavit is attached. So you attach the affidavit to the deed and you file that. And many of us have decided what we're going to do is we're going to, in the deed itself, make reference to the affidavit and say that the affidavit is attached. So part of that is to remind ourselves. Part of that is to make certain that when it's filed, the whoever looks at it later on will know that it was attached, and then have the affidavit attached.
Well, if you want to join the conversation today, the number to call in is 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000, and we'll be right back with more right here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Our special guest is Ron Shalhot, attorney at law. And if you want to call in and join the conversation, the number to call in is 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000.
Okay, we were talking about the Alien Ownership Act, and I have a question. You know, you have these affidavits that you have to file attached to your deed.
Correct.
So filed at the same time as the deed, which, by the way, Mark, we need to add to our filing expense because we went over cost this week.
Every time you add a page, it adds $2.
It does.
To closing.
So, well, and usually the title companies will pick this up in terms of the affidavit itself. I mean, you won't have that likely in your contracts, et cetera, although you may have a copy of it in your package just to have it for them to look at.
Yeah, and if it's attached to the deed, if it's not a part of the deed, it's $18 to file that first page. So so filing fees are mounting up the more we do. But I have a question about a quit claim deed. If somebody files a quit claim deed, must it have an affidavit as well? It's not changing ownership. It's relinquishing ownership.
I don't understand what you're talking about, relinquishing versus changing ownership.
Well, it's not bringing a new person into title. It's taking an existing owner out of title.
That's changing ownership of the title, isn't it?
Okay. That's why I have you, Ron.
But it is a nuance in the law that we do debate and talk about, and some may say yes and some say no. I will take the approach that if in doubt, file the affidavit with it, simply because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And when I say that, I mean with a title examiner in the future. We do a lot of things today, but really what we've got to look at is the future. Future title examiner who's going to look at this, and are they going to say, this passes the title, no problem, no red flags, or are they going to red flag this transaction, say, oh, no, you should have done that, which is the fear. And I talked about this, I think, last time I was here. The fear that I've had with this whole thing coming in is, what do we do in the between times where we're not really sure what we're doing? What are the title examiners of the future going to say? Are they going to say, well, you should have anticipated, or you should have done, or you didn't do it and you got to fix it? One of the questions that came up last time was about corrective deeds. You know, you had a deed where there was some mistake in it, so you've got to correct it, but it's after the November 1st deadline to do this. And we weren't sure, and we thought, well, you may have to. Well, sometimes that's impossible because of changing situations. You know, people pass away, things like that. However, the Attorney General opinion is now that corrective deeds, which relate back to the original deed, transferring ownership, do not convey title, and therefore you don't have to attach that to it. Same way an affidavit of a surviving joint tenant, where you have a spouse pass away and then the survivor files that affidavit to take sole possession of the property, that does not need the affidavit as well. One of the difficulties we're running into, though, is how many counties are there in Oklahoma?
Right, 77, right?
Yes.
I have a grandson that knows the counties in every state.
And the difficulty is they put this burden on the poor county clerks to look at this, and the county clerk probably doesn't have the experience or all this knowledge, and even we've debated a lot of it. Who do they look to? They look to the district attorney of the county where they're at, and the district attorney is probably more along the lines of felony misdemeanors, things like that, and not alien ownership affidavit. So there's been a lot of inconsistency. I've seen things where lawyers have tried to file, for example, a transfer on death deed in a certain county. They say, no, you got to have the ownership affidavit. But in another county, they say, you can file without the ownership affidavit. So there was some inconsistency. The attorney general has tried to clarify this, done a good job with that. Sending out this memorandum on February 4th certainly helps. But not all the information gets to the person who's at that desk that's looking at it and tells you yes or no. And sometimes you'll have different receiving clerks at the county clerk's office give you different answers, too. So
I suspect that the closers at title companies are going to come up with a form in the past tense, like when I purchased this, I was a bona fide citizen, a resident of Oklahoma.
We cannot change the attorney general affidavit. The attorney general affidavit is the affidavit. You have to use that one.
And but they can change that, right? They did. They already changed it.
The attorney general can change it, right. Yes. But you have to use the attorney general affidavit. You cannot make your own. Some lawyers have tried to fix some things or improve on it, if you want to call it that, and they were denied because the clerk looked at it and said, well, this isn't the attorney general affidavit, so no. And you have to give it up to the clerks because they're not going to sit there and make a legal judgment. You know, they're just going to look at it and say, does this comply with the law as we know it? Yes, it does. File it. No, it doesn't. We won't file it. So you have to give the county clerks a bit of leeway on this. This is so new. Even the lawyers don't agree. And again, you know, we have to think about what will title examiners in the future see about this and make determinations on this. I've seen differences of opinion on things where some lawyers who are title examiners say, well, I wouldn't pass that in my title if that came to me. Where other lawyers said, well, this is the way I've been doing it. So
that's yet to be determined.
It is. I got a question that may be too deep into the woods for it. But what is going to happen, or has the scenario come up where a nosy neighbor who thinks that their neighbor is not legally taking title, they think they are not a citizen of Oklahoma or a U.S. citizen, and brings up and proves, but the person has signed it, that they were, so there's fraud in what happens then?
Take it to the Attorney General's office. That's
becomes a criminal potential.
Well, you look at it from the standpoint of the district attorneys enforce the criminal statutes in their county, but you also have the Attorney General as well. It is Oklahoma that can then come and possess the property, but they have to file an action to do that. It's very rarely done, but it has been done. Consequently, you can make that complaint, but you've got to make it to somebody else. This is not something where I, as a private citizen, can bring.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
It's interesting.
We could talk the rest of the hour on that, but let's not.
And we're going to be back on that same subject probably next time I'm here, too.
Well, I know, because that's an evolving situation with alien ownership. Okay.
And that's the law. The law is evolving all the time. That's why I'm here often. And remember, we had the McGirt decision with the Native Americans.
Yes.
We talked about that and all the changes resulting from that, and it's still happening.
So, and when it evolves, we'll bring it to you. Ron's going to be here for us. Okay, let's talk about some of the offers on property. I got two offers yesterday on listings that the person sending them said, I'm sending you a full price offer. But yet, as I looked at it, there was no signature of a purchaser. There was a proposal, is what I call it, not an offer. Then they sent another email and say, did you get the offer? I need to know that you presented that to the seller of the property. So here's the scenario. Here is the actual offer. They wanted to purchase a property for $425,000. They are going to pay $25,500 down payment. They want to finance $399,500, make an earnest money deposit of $2,000, and close in 15 to 30 days. That all sounds awesome, doesn't it? Except the problem comes when they're going, Mr. Seller, don't pay off your note. I will keep making those payments. And instead of paying you your equity in cash, I'm going to pay that out over a 30-year period of time. The problem is that's not an assumable loan that the seller has. So we've got a lot of talking.
Boy, that sounds like there is a lot of trouble.
And right here in River City.
Right here in River City. Capital T. We'll be right back right here after the break on Oklahoma Real Estate On the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team, here with Becky Ivins and our special guest, attorney at law, Ron Shalhot. And it is time for our word of the day. Our word of the day is brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 405-728-3700. All right, which one of you two has our word of the day?
Ron always has the word of the day, and it usually is a French origin. So,
is that a punt? It's not even football season.
Yeah, there you go.
Or a bounce pass. We'll take that since it's basketball season. You know, we've talked about the Alien Ownership Act. We made a lot of presumptions, and then you've got a scenario here, and we're going to presume a lot of things. So I think the word of the day should be presumption.
Presumption, okay.
Yeah, and a matter of fact, just so happens that a case that came out in December of last year, the Butterfield versus McCoy Revocable Trust case, the court gave us a definition of presumption. According to Black's Law Dictionary, so we're going to utilize that today.
Okay.
All right, so presumption is something that is thought to be true because it is highly probable. Mm-hmm. Now, in law, we do sometimes have presumptions in terms of evidence that something is presumed to be true unless you can bring up contrary evidence that it's presumed that the sun will come up in the east today. We presume that. Of course, we don't know until it actually happens. We presume we're going to be able to see the eclipse in April. Clouds could come. We may not. So it's a presumption that we make. It's not a fact yet, but we can presume it to be true, but then it can be disproven.
Okay. Presumption brought to you by Robbins Roofing. I love working with Robbins Roofing. I just have to say that. I've just worked with them on a couple of roofs, and they are just so easy to deal with and so professional. So give our friends at Robbins Roofing a call if you need them. Okay, we're talking about wraparound mortgages. That's what this kind of involves, right?
Well, kind of, but then they have a little nuance in it.
Yes, they do. So what happens is a company or an individual could, but this is a couple of big companies are doing this, coming in with offers on property, offering to take over your mortgage, start making payments on your mortgage, paying you enough cash to where you can pay your cost of the transaction, your real estate commission, your bringing your abstract to date, filing fees, things like that. And then on your equity, they pay that out over a period of, the one I got this week, both of them I got this week were over 30 years. Now it's at 3% too. They will pay you a 3% on a second mortgage. So there's all kinds of wrong with that.
That's what, because this is the first time I've seen one of these, like, all written out. I've heard of them.
Well, and the thing is that I get a lot of these, frankly. But they don't go anywhere because they come to me not as a bona fide offer.
That's what I say. They're not a real offer.
A bona fide offer has a signature on it.
Yeah.
This is a proposal, is what I call it. They send a copy of the contract form, not a contract, but a contract form, which is so many pages. It's not our standard contract. Who wants to read all that to start with? I mean, we're talking maybe 20 pages.
Well, when it's not your standard contract, you don't know what's in it. You have a standardized contract that the Realtors Association has. It's online. It's available. We've read it. We've seen it. We're used to it. You have seminars on it. When somebody comes up with a different contract, and I've written some of these. I've written some of these purchase contracts that are different. Then you actually have to read it and read it closely.
And builders have their own contract typically. So you have to read through those. When I say 20 pages, this is printed on both sides, by the way. So maybe 40 pages of a contract. First of all, the seller doesn't walk away with enough money except just to move. So they don't get their whole equity.
And I've looked at some of these, too. You alerted me of this the other day, and I looked at a little bit of it. Some of it involves the seller, quote-unquote, staying in the property and actually renting it back from the new, quote-unquote, buyer. So some of it doesn't even involve a move.
Now, that's right. There's companies that do that, too. And now, that will work. I'll tell you what happens on those is this is the forbearance result of the mortgage companies, the government approving and telling mortgage companies on government-backed loans that during this COVID thing, you could forego your payments and not make any. But then at the end of that time, everything's due.
And it all stacks up.
And a big payment's due.
Now, this is not the reverse mortgage situation.
No.
No, that's the reverse mortgage is where you take out the equity, you get paid for that, and there's a second mortgage on the property that's there. And that second mortgage, you've basically taken that money out, and you've got a technical mortgage that many times you don't pay a dime on, but then when you go to transfer it or if you pass away, your estate goes to transfer it, that mortgage company can foreclose on it and then get their money back because they don't give you 100% of the equity. It's about 80%, something like that.
It depends on your age. Something between about 55% and about – they can go up to – about 85%.
But this is different because this is kind of has that where they're paying you your equity, but yet it's financed. You're not getting all that cash up front. You're getting it in terms of a loan.
Yes. But the problem I see with this is the companies want this 3% and 4% interest rate on the mortgages. The original mortgage, which you can't get that interest rate anymore.
But they're also on the second mortgage, they're only offering, what, 3%?
3% on a second mortgage. No, nobody would ever pay. I mean, to be in a second position on a mortgage to start with.
With all the risk.
Yeah. And those are usually at least 2%, usually 3 or 4% higher interest rate than a first mortgage. Because it's a terrible position to be in, to be second in line in case somebody falls on hard times. You're not going to get paid.
Well, unless there's a substantial amount of equity in the home, I'm assuming no company is going to make that kind of proposal. In other words, if you've got an equity of $10,000 on your house, I don't think that this is going to be a proposal that's going to be made to you. But on the other hand, if you have a substantial amount of equity, that company knows that it's in a good position with regard to the original mortgage.
And a lot of people have substantial equity because the house prices have gone up so much from when these loans were originated at 3% interest.
Right. So you look at it, is it a bona fide offer, first of all? And you've already answered that question. So
if it's not signed, it's not an offer.
It's not an offer. if you get one that is signed, then you have to at least present it. If it is a bona fide offer, but then again, too, you have to look at it. There are caveats with regard to the original mortgage. Most of those mortgages have a you can't transfer your interest away. That's many times an element of default. At least I've put that in mine that I draft up, and I've seen that in a lot of them. So
even if it is an assumable mortgage, like an FHA mortgage or a VA mortgage, they don't want to assume it. They want to keep it in your name, and you have to trust this company is going to make those payments.
But the problem there is if you're transferring your ownership away, then you're compromising that original mortgage because you're not the owner of that property. They are the owner of that property. That can lead into some real serious troubles when this company, if they default, you get bad economic times. Something happens, or actually I've seen some of these where they can assign it. This proposal that you've got from, you know, Mark's company comes up and does this, but then Mark's company can assign it to Ron's company, and Ron's company may not be as solvent as Mark's company. And what happens if they go file bankruptcy or if there's a receiver appointed? I mean, you can get into a whole world of mess on this, where you have a zombie type of situation where it returns to haunt you and you thought you were done with it. And you're doing it for 30 years?
That's what the proposal is, yes. Is that, and even if it were just that they paid all the money, the equity in cash, and take over a mortgage payment, the new buyer take over the seller's payment, if it's not assumable, you cannot transfer your – well, if you transfer your ownership, that whole thing could become due and payable. Company's not going to pay that, the new buyer. So you're going to have a foreclosure on your hands also.
Well, you always got to be aware of who is taking the most risk. Who is at risk? We'll be right back with your smoking hot deal right here on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. It is time for our smoking hot deal.
Hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot. Oh, no.
Our smoking hot deal is brought to you by Casa Perico Mexican Grill, located on the southwest corner of 122nd and Penn, on 63rd, just west of Meridian, at 505 East Main Street in Yukon, and on May Avenue, just north of Hefner Road.
Well, our smoking hot deal, are you ready for it? This one is just north of Twin Lakes Gun Club Edition in Brookhaven Estates. And it is 2,200 square feet, a little bit more, built in the mid to late 70s and is a two-story. Now, it's got zoned heating and air conditioning. That's the big deal about a two-story. It's listed for $290,000. It's an old English style house.
Mm.
So the Tudor style kind of. And it is so pretty. And right there, it's got updated appliances. And go to BeckyIvins.com and look at that because it is a pretty home and spacious, 2,200 feet. So.
You can go to BeckyIvins.com, that's BeckyIvins.com. Click on search listings. You can take a virtual tour or you can schedule an in-person tour.
That is a beautiful picture you're showing here on your computer.
That's it is beautiful. A pretty house, isn't it?
I would like that house, except it's two-story and my wife's knees.
I know. If your knees are hurting you and you need to kind of rearrange yourself to a one-story, give us a call because we specialize in that, frankly, downsizing or the right sizing to get you the right type of property to make your life happy.
I finally saw it's reminding me of an article I saw that we might want to talk about on a radio show that I had thought this was the case, but I've never saw an article before about it, that one of the inventory issues is baby boomers are keeping their upstairs. They're just not going up there, that they're not moving. They're staying where they are.
There was another big report that came out this week that Moore, Oklahoma, is in the top 10. I think it was like number six, maybe, cities for first-time home buyers nationally. Well, first-time home buyers buy in Moore, Oklahoma.
Well, that's my daughter's in the statistic.
There you go. Yeah,
first-time home buyer bought in Moore.
Yes.
Well, to go to Mark's point, though, the reason for that being in that age group is that upstairs then becomes a free storage facility.
And they don't have to put it in the attic. You can upstairs,
right.
Convenient.
Dump the stuff there.
Yeah, I can argue that that is not free. That
well, you don't have to fill in the garage.
That's true.
And you don't have to rent a storage facility. It's all right there.
It is easily accessible up those stairs.
Yeah, I don't want to take us too far down this rabbit hole, but I'm going to tell you, I think this is a huge issue, is you have the largest generation that it's ever been, and they are not moving like previous generations have.
Because they can't afford to.
And there's a multifaceted part of it, and it's very and it's one of the things that is contributing to low inventory and keeping prices stable.
Well, some of it, though, too, is where would you move to?
Because there's not,
like for my situation, there's not a smaller house to move to because the inventory is not there. And I really don't want to move out of Oklahoma. I moved here and I like it here. So I'm going to stay.
Well, we like you here too, Ron.
Okay. Before we get gone out of here, get gone. Is
get
that,
gone.
Get
that
gone.
Is an Oklahoma truism.
I want to get back to the wraparound mortgage. That's what I call it, is a wraparound mortgage, meaning that you basically keep the seller's mortgage and just start making payments on it. You do not formally assume that mortgage and release the seller of the liability of paying the mortgage. So what could possibly go wrong there, Ron?
Well, if, Becky, you wanted to pay my mortgage, feel free. I'm sure the finance company will take your cash probably quicker than mine because you have, you know, pretty good amount of cash. So you can.
That's so funny.
You can make my payment, and I don't think they're going to care. I don't think they're going to worry about it. As long as they get their money, they don't care. Now, the problem is going to be if I relinquish ownership. Because you have to look at the note in the mortgage and see what the terms say. And will they care? A lot of the thought is, well, they won't care. You know, they really don't care. They won't look at it. As long as they get their cash, they don't care. And there's a lot of truism to that because there are so many financing
situations. It's a presumption.
It is a presumption. However, I have also seen that turn bad. And it can turn bad another way, too. For example, let's say I was the person who's selling, and then I file bankruptcy. Well, that mortgage is going to have to be included in my bankruptcy. And what's that mortgage company going to do? What's that new, quote-unquote, buyer going to do? And one of the complaints that I've read about this is there's some fear that you're having a lot of corporate takeovers of real property. And either they're going to become rentals or they're going to manage that property. You're going to have the Alien Ownership Act affidavit come in on this, by the way. But you can have that happen to neighborhoods, et cetera. So there is some dissatisfaction with that idea.
So when, like, if someone does this, do they end up being, like, landlord-tenant?
Well, if I'm the seller and I'm going to still live there,
yeah.
Technically, yes, but in those agreements where they do have a rental component to it, they say what the rent's going to be, but they also say that they can reasonably raise the rent. So my question would be, well, what is that going to be, and is that going to supersede the second mortgage, that payment that you're supposed to be getting on the equity from the house, and is that going to be more than the amortization of that? You mean you take an amortization of out, maybe, you know, $600, $700 a month. Well, if they're charging you $1,500 rent and then they up it to $2,000, what are you going to do? There has to be some guarantees. And for 30 years, you know, I look at my age, and except for Mark and Mike, you know, the rest of us in this room aren't that young. And consequently, 30 years is probably not realistic for us.
Well, you're just not going to live to collect all your mortgage for sure. What are the perils of a real estate licensee participating in a transaction like this?
Well, you have to make sure that you fully disclose the ins and outs of the transaction. First off, you have to look at whether it's legal, and because these are all different. So I can't speak to the legality of just a vague proposal, if it is a proposal. But as a realtor, I think you would want to be aware of the benefits and the burdens on this, because your client, who's the presumptive seller, is not going to know. This is going to be something new to them. They're relying upon you to give them good advice. They're not going to go talk to a lawyer about the situation, although I've seen those contracts, and they say in them that they have encouraged you to talk to legal counsel.
Right. And I'm not legal counsel.
You're not legal counsel.
Got a lot of experience in the real estate transactions, and you can't but not legal.
And if it's you, you can't refer them over to me, because I represent you, and I can't represent those individuals.
Right. There's a lot of that going around. So we the wraparound mortgage, they don't call it wraparound mortgage, though. So beware of that, and call your mortgage company and see if it's okay with them before you enter into a situation like this.
As always, thanks, Ron Shalott, for being with us, and we hope you all have a great week.
May the Lord always watch over you, and may all of your hopes turn to wishes, and may all of your wishes come true. May each day